Backseat Producers, special episode number 14, Summer Superhero Movies 2011 with special guests T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne. Hey, this is Tony, and I've got two special guests with me. You guys want to introduce yourselves? I don't know why you need an introduction.
It helps because you never know when people are jumping in, and there may be some people out there who didn't hear the epic 3.5 hour episode that was Double Trouble back in 2008.
Some of them might have fallen asleep. I don't know.
Yeah, can you believe that was 3 years ago? The first time.
That's pretty wild.
I'm ancient.
That is pretty wild. That is. I'm trying to think now.
I'm Philippa Ballantyne, and he's T. Morris. and we're writers and podcasters and
movie fans.
True. And backseat producers. You guys have, I think the last time you were on, I officially dubbed you backseat producers.
That's right, you did. I remember that one. And I think for that show we only went like 2 hours of
it. Yeah, it was
a light show.
It was a short episode. I think some people commented, "Hey, where's the rest of it?"
Yeah.
Awesome.
What we're going to talk about tonight before and we'll get into the subject in a few minutes. But we're going to talk about the summer superhero movies, the big ones, because there were actually one or two small ones. But the big four summer superhero movies: Thor, Captain America, Green Lantern, and X-Men First Class.
We saw all of those.
Yes, we saw. I was actually going to also lump into there Cowboys and Aliens if we were going to open it up for comic book movies. But if you want to stick with just superhero movies, we can do that.
David Craig is a superhero.
We're going to stick. He is a superhero.
Yeah. For now, we're going to stick with summer superhero movies. Now there was one other superhero movie that was very small. It got a little bit of notice in the St. Louis area because the director, I know he's the director. He may be the writer also. Is from the St. Louis area. It's a movie called Super.
Oh, wait a minute. That was the one with...
Rainn Wilson?
Kevin Bacon played the villain?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember it was a dark comedy about a guy who... I didn't see it, but I remember being very curious about it. The guy was like a plumber, or he was some super underachiever.
Right.
And it had whispers of Kick-Ass about it. You know, a guy who just basically wanted to be a superhero. And he was trying to do it to win back his girlfriend, because his girlfriend was with Kevin Bacon, who was a bad boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it either, but it did just, within the last 2 weeks, I think, came out on DVD. It's worth noting, but we're not going to talk about it, because nobody's seen
it.
All
right. Well, there is that.
No, we haven't seen that.
So before we get into the topic, I just want to remind everyone, Sausage Fest is still going strong. In fact, today we actually hit our campaign goal on Indiegogo, but we are still looking for donations. The more money we raise now, the more we're just going to be able to give to the charity. So, and I think I can safely say at this point, because my attorney has approved me saying this, the money is going to the Komen Foundation. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we are. It is for breast cancer awareness, and it's, you know, everybody's got boobs. Anyone can get breast cancer. It's not just men. It's not just women. It's men also. And it's, you know, it's easy to snicker about it and say things like we're putting our meat where the pink is, which is our tagline for.
Now, who would say that?
I don't know. It might just be the tagline for this year, you know, it's something that we've done. We've actually turned our website pink for the last 3 years now. I think this will be the fourth year we're doing it. So it's just something that we've done since the primary hosts are all males. We enjoy boobs. It's fair We're to fans. Say. It's fair to say we like them. We want to make sure that everybody's safe. We throw a party. We eat some meat. We drink a lot, and we give to breast cancer awareness charities. That said,
it's a great concept, man. So good luck. I hope it all works
thank
out.
Thank you. Yeah, it's and if anybody's showing up at Archon this year, the party will be Saturday night at 10 p.m. We don't know exactly where because we haven't got our room yet. we've reserved it, but they haven't. You know, apparently they don't tell you what room you're in until you actually show up. But all you have to do, we will have pink flyers everywhere. And just find one of those or look for the large gentleman, because most of us are large gentlemen, in pink T-shirts on Saturday, and we can tell you where to go for the party on Saturday night.
Save us a couple of T-shirts, yeah. too. All
oh, right. absolutely. Absolutely. Oh,
awesome.
All right. So is there anything you guys want to talk about? I know you guys have just started up your new podcast, which I have been listening to.
Yes, the second episode of the whopping second episode of The Shared Desk dropped today, and that was at where?
Thesharedesk.com. And we talked to our agent, and we had Crazy Uncle Charlie turned up.
Yeah, Crazy Uncle Charlie stops by and gives a little bit of writing advice for those interested.
for what it's worth.
For what it's worth.
I listened this morning. It was a fun episode.
Good. So your thoughts on Crazy Uncle Charlie?
Crazy Uncle Charlie is crazy.
Well, guess what? He may make it to Archon, and he may even show up and do some live segments to help raise money for Sausage Fest. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, he has got a sausage.
Yes, he does. from what he tells us, it is a sausage full of Adonis DNA and tiger's blood, for whatever
yeah.
that's worth.
Yeah.
But you know, we digress. No, we have the shared desk out. That's been great. And also this month is also the month that we released, or I should say HarperCollins Audio released the audiobook version of The Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. I've been listening to it, and the guy does an absolutely bang-up job on it. I mean,
it's British. I love the British accent.
But what's amazing about this, Pip, is if you think about it, we throw a lot at this guy. I mean, we've got Italian characters, we've got street urchins, we've got
South Africans, we've got New Zealanders, Australians, Canadians. It's all over the place.
And he's tackling it. He's tackling it like a pro. So, awesome. I mean, kudos to the guy. And then I'm going to let Pip talk about our recent venture with the Kindle, and as soon as Smashwords starts playing along,
I'm still wrestling. You know, with it.
Yeah, iPad and Nook readers.
Yeah, so we've just started releasing last week the short stories that we've been podcasting, the Ministry Tales from the Archives that we've been they're almost done. We've only got two more stories to podcast. But we started putting them out on the Kindle, and I'm working towards getting on the Smashwords for the Nook and the iPad and all the other.
Yeah, I keep giving you guys trouble about the Nook.
Yeah, it's not for want of trying. The meat grinder at Smashwords is a persnickety thing. But eventually we hope to have them all out, available for all peoples on all formats and all digital readers and such like.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, and we're having a lot of fun. I'm getting to make little covers for each little story, and they're all a mere 99 cents.
Now let me ask you this: Are you planning to collect them at all? Like, do a compilation?
Well, this is sort of experimental, really. We're seeing how they go. I did try and do a erotic a la carte anthology, and it actually didn't do as well as I thought it would. So I decided to split them up, and, you know, the whole idea is, you know, when you buy a bag of mixed candy and there's always something in there that you don't necessarily like?
Oh, yeah.
I find I don't read a lot of anthologies because of that, because I'm like, I know there's going to be a couple in there that I'm like, eh. This is the chewy caramel that I don't like, or the Brazil nut. I'm not a fan of the Brazil nut. So by breaking them up and making them 99 cents, then people can pick and choose which ones they like, which authors, you know, which authors they want to read, because we've got people like Phil Rossi and Jack Mangan and Nathan Lowell and us.
Yeah,
all
and,
in there.
And also, it's been a really neat experiment. We're going to talk more about the details in episode 3 of the Shared Desk. So we're not going to give out too much of the backseat producers, but you get an idea of what the show's about. Because that's a question we've been getting a lot. We've been getting, why aren't you doing it as an anthology? Why 99¢ a piece? And we're going to talk more about that on the show.
But
it's been a really interesting experiment so far. I'm gonna talk about the numbers and what has been selling better. I'm gonna save that for the Shared Desk because that was a real surprise, and I'll just leave it at that.
All right. One other thing I did forget to mention in talking about Sausage Fest, I did get confirmation today, and this is now gonna be like the first time I'm saying it anywhere. There is going to be a Sausage Fest West this year as well. One of our listeners lives out in Sacramento. He has a birthday the second weekend in October, so the Saturday after the Sausage Fest Maine. He got the idea that, you know what, my friends are 30 something slacker no goods, that when they want to do something nice, they can. He is donating his birthday to Sausage Fest and encouraging all his friends to come together with him on his birthday and have some drinks, and they're going to cook up some sausage, and he's going to collect donations from his friends, and it's going to the charity as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I just got a new grill, so maybe next year we got to think about doing, like, you know, we should do a Sausage Fest East. That might be fun.
That could be something for Balticon.
Better. We'll have to think about that.
Come out for that.
You just might, my friend. You just might. And we have a guest room. Mm-hmm. So
there you go. All right, so let's go ahead and get started jumping into this. We've got 4 movies to talk about. Let's go ahead and say up front, spoilers.
massive spoilers.
We're going to spoil all 4 of these movies and any movies that they were sequels of or anything related to the earlier Marvel movies that is the Marvel Studio Pictures, because they are all tied together. Spoilers.
Okay.
So, spoilers.
We are all set. Now, the question is, do we want to do this in any kind of particular order, or do we just want to just jump in and go for it? What's your plan? What do we want to do here?
I have no plan. So, right. I'm going to go ahead and say, ladies' choice. Pip, what should we start with?
Ladies' choice. There we go.
I want to go with one of my favorites, X-Men First Class.
Okay, let's jump in with X-Men First Class.
Nice.
X-Men First Class.
Because this is the one that I had to persuade T to go to.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, this was the second biggest surprise for me at the movie theaters. And actually, this is the second biggest surprise for the comic book films. I really did not want to go see X-Men First Class because of X-Men 3.
Oh.
I mean, yeah. I just did not. I mean, and seeing how much of a train wreck the trailer was for X-Men Origins Wolverine, I really did not want to, you know, I didn't even bother with X-Men.
You did not want to go there again.
No, yeah. I did not.
I have not seen Wolverine. And from the time I started collecting comic books through when I stopped, I was absolutely a Wolverine fan, and I have yet to see that movie.
Well, I mean, the closest I came to the movie was while I was away doing a speaking tour. It came out in 2009, and Natalie actually went to go and see it. My late wife Natalie went to go see it, and she, you know, it was one of the first things she said to me when she picked me up from the airport. She went, "So while you're away, I went to the movies." I was like, "Oh, what'd you see?" "X-Men Origins Wolverine." And then there was this long pause in the car, and I just looked at her, and she was like, "You were right."
Yeah.
So, I mean, and you know, bless his heart, Hugh Jackman tried. I'm sure he tried, because he was really good in the first 2 films, and he even tried in the 3rd film, but I did not want to go and see X-Men, but you know, I will say this: he made up for X-Men 3 and X-Men Origins Wolverine with his brilliant cameo in X-Men like First Class.
That cameo was fantastic.
It was. They didn't even have to say his name. You knew who he was, and it made perfect sense that he was there. And I thought it was brilliant. And he was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll do the sideburns again. I'll come back."
Yeah. So. I'm going to go ahead and do this like we do the normal episodes, but we'll do it a little quicker. And for your reference, we do a high-level review, talk briefly about acting, talk about the plot, and then at the end we'll say basically who this movie is for. I think we'll save that until we talk about all the movies. Mm-hmm. And then what I think we might do is kind of give a personal ranking. So as we're talking about it, think mm-hmm. of the four, 1 to 4, what order you'd put them in. So so I'm warning you that we're going to do that at the end.
Yeah, I think we're going to have some differences there.
So 1 to 4?
That's what makes it interesting, yes.
Okay. Yes. So, Pip?
High level, what'd you think?
I loved it. I loved the look of it. Mm-hmm. I loved the acting. And the story was pretty good as well. I guess I was drawn in by the Professor X, Magneto, dynamic, bromance, ugly breakup, kind of thing. I really enjoyed it, and it was one of my favorites of the summer, and unexpected. I also had problems with some of the previous X-Men movies, but I had heard good things about it, that it had a nice 60s vibe to it, and I was like, yeah, 60s, I can, you know. I like the idea that it was set back, you know, it wasn't like pushed forward into modern times. It was retro.
Yes.
What about you, T?
Well, one of the things that I found absolutely fascinating about this X-Men movie is that it didn't look like an X-Men movie. It was filmed like a classic James Bond movie.
With the shag carpeting.
The shag carpeting that went into the nuclear reactor.
Yeah, everyone wants a submarine for their lair.
Don't we all? Yeah.
Yeah.
And if anyone's going to have a submarine, it's going to be Kevin Bacon.
Yes. If the submarine's a rockin', don't come a knockin'.
No, no kidding.
I was very impressed. I mean, I think the acting throughout was top-notch. I was very, very pleased at the nod to Bryan Singer because of how they opened the film and how we went beyond what I still believe is one of the most powerful openings of a comic book movie, when we see young Eric being taken away from his parents in the very first X-Men film.
Mm-hmm.
I found all the performance. I can never remember the actor's name. That played young Professor X, but he was wonderful.
James McAvoy.
Yeah, James McAvoy. I loved it when
he was Mr. Tumnus in the Narnia.
Yeah,
this Narnia movie.
Yeah, but he was also. I just loved the way he was going. He's going. Oh, you've got a slight mutation. Mutations are groovy, you know.
He was basically using his brains to hit on chicks in the 60s.
That's awesome.
You know what?
Of course, Xavier would do that.
And he had a nice
if you
can
read minds,
yeah.
If you could read minds. And you're in college, what else are you going to
and
use?
And you're a good-looking man.
Yeah.
And when you get older, you're going to look like Patrick Stewart? Hell yeah, you're going to hit on the chick.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
And I really liked the whole brother-sister relationship they played not Magneto. I'm blanking on the characters. Mystique.
Yeah.
With Mystique. And again, another really nice cameo when she was shapeshifting.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
And she shapeshifts into Rebecca Romijn. I was like, okay.
Oh, she goes, oh, you want me older?
Yeah. But
T was like,
Even Blue, I was kind of going, And I did. I really enjoyed, even though they were really departing from canon, I went with what they were doing. I mean, I really enjoyed. I thought the writing was very well done. I thought the performances were all very well done. I loved the direction of the film, and I loved the visuals of the film. So I'm definitely giving it top notch. But I will say that the one thing that I was a little disappointed in,
mm-hmm.
I thought the bromance should have lasted for a second film.
Yeah, you wanted more bromance.
I wanted more of the bromance because the only time I have ever bought that Magneto and Professor X were friends was in the first film. I finally understood, oh, these guys are friends. They just have political differences. And watching McKellen and Stewart play off of each other and play with that friendship was poetic.
Yeah.
And I was getting that feel from Michael Fassbaum. Is that his name?
Yes, mm-hmm. From Fassbender.
Fassbender. Michael Fassbender and the other gentleman.
James McAvoy.
And James McAvoy. I got that vibe. But then they said, okay, we're going to end this movie with them, with their bromance ending. And I'm like, I would like to have seen it end in a second film.
You just wanted the tension pulled out a little bit longer.
I did. I wanted the tension pulled out a little longer in the film.
Yeah, you could have been right.
I did think that the ending was pretty abrupt. And in trying to pull together, I mean, the one complaint I had is like the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Was this big Jenga tower that they were building that was like, okay, we have all these pieces that we have to put in place so that everybody understands that the next thing that happens is X-Men 1.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate because I would have almost liked to see them just leave all of that stuff hanging. One, it would have given them an option for another movie to put in there, which I would have been perfectly pleased with.
Sure.
So they haven't got an option on another movie. That's a shame.
Well, if you look at the story, the way they set up, I don't know. You know,
they don't have to if they don't want to.
Right. Right. They've effectively closed the book, and they can reopen it.
Mm.
But right. If they would have left it open, I think they would have. I know I had heard a lot of disappointment from people that the ending was really abrupt and how quickly they tried to cram in a lot of pieces. Mystique's flip, Xavier losing his hair, losing his legs. I mean, it was just like one thing right after another. It was like, oh, and this is going to happen next. Okay, and now we're going to have this. It was there was a little bit of that going on at the end, and I'll take it a step further in what you said, T, about believing their friendship. I felt that I was told that they had a friendship in X-Men 1, and those guys played it well, but watching it play out in this movie was fabulous.
Yeah.
I thought
and that's the thing. I wanted more of that so that when they had the parting of ways, it had a little more impact.
Mm. Yes.
I felt like it was stunted because they're like, oh, they're going to go for the separation.
There might have been
now.
Because if they were probably obviously playing to see how it went.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they wanted to have an ending that...
Because the last two X-Men were such clunkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, this... If you really look at the passage of time in the story, there was a lot that happened in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of things going on.
And it didn't feel like it. It didn't feel like a lot.
You went from, like, World War II to...
To the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yes.
Yeah. But it didn't feel like there was anything that was rushed. The montages were nicely done.
Yeah.
And I really felt that even with all the characters that they gave us in those young X-Men,
mm-hmm.
I felt like I had a good deal of time with each of them. I never felt short shifted on any of their
one
stories.
One didn't outshine or
dominate.
Or dominate. Yeah,
exactly.
It was very much like the first two X-Men films.
Yes,
everybody was getting good screen time. Yeah, yeah. So I did.
That was the surprise of the summer, really. I think that one.
Like, well, that was my second surprise for the summer. That was my second surprise. For the summer.
Okay.
Yeah. So now are we ranking it now or are we
Let's rank it at the end after we talk about it.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Let's move on. Was one of the other summer superhero movies one of the surprises to you?
The biggest summer surprise for me was Thor.
Okay.
I was convinced that Thor was going to be a clunker.
Even though it's a Kenneth Branagh movie.
See, that was my other problem was that I hate to say this, but I will come clean on Backseat Producers. I have been so disappointed in some of Kenneth Branagh's recent films that I really didn't think he had it in him. I really didn't. First off, I was like, Kenneth Branagh. I mean, I was going to go to support Kenneth Branagh because I'm a huge, huge Kenneth Branagh fan.
Right.
But that's just two things I would never put together. Kenneth Branagh and Marvel Comics. That was tough for my brain to wrap around. And second, the most epic thing that Kenneth Branagh has ever directed, even beyond Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which I felt like my cheese stands alone. I really enjoyed Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
I'm with you.
I really enjoyed even the visuals. Even though it had that home wrecker, Helena Bonham Carter, in it, I still appreciate the film. And because De Niro made me feel for the monster.
Oh, yeah.
And that was what I remember. Because right before Branagh's Frankenstein, yeah, I'm getting the wrap it up.
Bring it back on track.
I'm going to bring it back on track. But I remember when I read Frankenstein, when I read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein before seeing the film, I felt for the monster. I felt worse for the monster than I did for Frankenstein.
Victor was kind of a dick, though. So.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. Branagh played him like a dick.
Well, yeah.
And I appreciated that. But Branagh's biggest epic film was Hamlet. And yes. I still think it's a beautiful rendition of Hamlet. But it's not Thor. And there's a lot of special effects involved. I'm sitting here going, this is not going to bode well. And I just had bad... And then, of course, there was the material itself. I find Thor to be a boring bag of wind.
Yes.
And I really didn't care for Thor, the comic book. So I was going in with the mindset of, okay, I'm going to... But then I started hearing the reviews. I thought it was kind of cool because before the movie came out, people were going, well, Branagh's career's done. There's this one guy in Great Britain who was just raking Branagh over the coals. They were saying things like, yes, he was supposed to be our next Olivier, and here he is doing comic book films. Oh, how gauche, you know?
Well, considering that Shakespeare was probably the comic book artist, I mean, he had the same level of... he was a populist.
He was,
so
yeah, exactly.
Comic books are popular.
But then after the movie came out, people were going, hold on a second, this is pretty good. And then they started talking about the bar being raised for Captain America. And I'm like, really? So I said, okay, you know what? Let's take a crapshoot and let's go and see Thor. And I was not only pleasantly surprised, I was absolutely wrapped up in this film. Visually, it was stunning. Visually, it was stunning. And about an hour in, I thought to myself, of course Branagh's going to direct this. Because just in the way the script was done, it was very Shakespearean. It was about redemption.
Oh, yeah.
And Anthony Hopkins did not go over that. He didn't phone in the performance. Chris Hainsworth, he brought his A-game. He brought his A-game.
He was charming.
He was very charming. See, that was the thing.
He was fantastic.
No one expects Thor to be charming.
What?
He was fantastic.
He was. And that's the other thing, too. He was charming. A big plus for the guy who played Hawkeye. He's got his bow.
Jeremy Renner. Who's going to be Hawkeye in the Avengers movie.
In the Avengers. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that he's got his bro drawn, and he's going, okay, you better tell me what to do, because I'm starting to root for this guy.
Yeah.
There was a sense of fun, and that was the other thing, too. I love the fact that Thor kept getting hit by the pickup truck. I mean, I had not had that much fun since the original Iron Man. So I was giving just, and the minute I got home, I went straight to iTunes and I downloaded the soundtrack. Because Patrick Doyle, who does a lot of Branagh's films, he turned in a great soundtrack for this movie. And I did. I genuinely loved this film. I went absolutely nuts about this movie. I think, and Pip just nails it on the head. I just thought that because Thor is Thor, he's just this arrogant. He is an arrogant prick, mm-hmm. and Hainsworth actually made him likable. That's saying a lot for a Norse god.
Yeah, he was the jock star quarterback that most people realize that dude's really a prick, but you still want him at your party because he has cool friends and he's actually kind of a cool guy. He's gonna break your shit.
Yeah,
but it's gonna be worth it.
But then his Achilles tendon snaps.
Yeah,
and suddenly he's having to deal with being just a prick.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved the movie visually as well. Although I've got to say that there was not nearly enough half naked Thor. From Lady's point of view, I'm like, seriously, Chris Hemsworth worked really, really hard to look like Thor. And he only took his shirt off once. I'm like, come on.
To be fair, Chris Hemsworth in the rain.
That's true.
Slow motion, no less.
And to be fair,
yeah, but he still had his shirt on. That would have been an ideal time for the shirt to come off. I'm just telling it. I'm just calling it how the ladies see it.
That's fair. Though, to be fair, there also wasn't nearly enough half naked Natalie Portman. So
She wasn't near naked.
Yeah. That was a slight problem.
I'm sorry if you're a Norse god.
Yeah,
exactly.
Charm the clothes off her.
Yeah, the clothes probably come off pretty quick.
I mean, Natalie Portman. I mean, I would say that Natalie Portman was the weak link in that film. But you know, she was coming off Black Swan, so I was kind of giving her a pass.
Well, was her character really?
I think it was how the character was written.
Yeah,
But Natalie Portman did redeem herself. When the hammer comes back to Thor,
yeah.
And she looks at him, she goes, this is a good look for you, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she said it with such conviction. I was like, you know, props to you.
Yep.
You know,
I'm jonesing on it. Those guys. Awesome.
And the intern.
Yes,
she was
yes.
very fun.
Yes.
She was very fun. So going on Facebook, and he smiles for the camera.
Yeah,
he's from
Sweden. If I remember
yeah,
correctly.
Isn't he from the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
I believe so.
He was very funny.
Skarsgård, if I
Peter Skarsgård.
Yeah, he's a Skarsgård.
We actually reviewed the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo not too long ago.
Yeah,
during Rape Month.
Well, yes, that's a whole other story, isn't it? Yeah. But that was great. I love that scene where he was like, they were going to drink for their ancestors. You know, he did his ancestors proud. He carries them back over.
I don't believe you're the god of thunder, but you should be. I mean, that was the thing. This movie could have been very dry and very blasé, and yet it had such a lovely sense of fun. Such a fantastic sense of fun. I couldn't get over this film.
Not only fun, but wonder also. The introduction of Asgard was stunning.
Wow, yeah.
That was absolutely beautiful.
Yes. But the contrast between the world that he gets dropped into and Asgard couldn't be any sort of greater. I mean,
yeah.
He's in dust and getting hit by pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Asgard's like rainbows and amazing architecture and, you know.
I was
pleasantly surprised that Branagh stepped up and because I honestly would never put him as a director of Marvel films, but he showed people I've done Shakespeare, I've worked with some of the greatest actors in the business, but you know what, I can let my hair down, have a good time, and do a special effects blockbuster.
Yeah, he did it. He convinced me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was actually disappointed to hear he will not be directing Thor 2.
Yes, that is true.
That's a real disappointment. I would have liked to have seen him come back for Thor 2. He is coming back, I think, as a producer, but I was really kind of hoping he would come back. But, you know, I couldn't get everything. So I was just happy to see Branagh step up and have a hit. I really was. Yeah. So, props to Thor. That was the biggest surprise for me this summer.
That, and I have to say, best Stanley cameo, I'm going to say ever.
Absolutely.
Ever.
That was a good
that
one.
Was a great yeah. Stanley cameo.
That was a good one. But you know, the thing I've liked about the films is I like how they have been paying homage to the you know, because like in the Spidey films, you know, you get the one classic, you get the classic stance of Spider-Man. When you get, you know, in the X-Men films, you get the classic stance of Wolverine. And I loved how in this one, but it never feels forced. It never feels forced. But in Thor, when he gets the hammer back and he's swinging the hammer over his head, and he's suspending himself in air around the storm, that was such a classic Thor image. And I was like, between with that, the way Haynesworth looked, the music, I was like, that is just one of those great iconic moments. Yeah. So yeah, yeah, big props for Thor.
Absolutely. And the one thing I did enjoy is that they didn't go back to the Marvel style of how he spoke.
Yeah.
With the these and the thous.
The Shakespearean approach, yeah. That would have been bad.
They gave him a noble tone,
mm-hmm.
but it never went to that level. Though I've got to say the one funny play.
Sorry, I have to ask, as a total non-Thor comic geek, why would a Viking say thee and thou?
It was I'd heard a Stanley interview, and it was he basically said he didn't really know how he would speak and how he would get that point across, and yeah. he had been reading Shakespeare recently. So he thought by doing that, it would give him just enough difference in speech without completely changing how he spoke to a point that 11-year-olds couldn't figure out what he's saying. And mm-hmm. and by adding the these and thous, it just gave him a noble bearing, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, intriguing.
Yeah. I did like how at one point he's talking to Agent Coulson, and he refers to him as Son of Coal. Did you catch that? That was great. Yeah. All right. Anything else about Thor? Are we prepared to move on?
We can move on.
And I think I'm kind of bracing for impact for what I think what is going to be next.
I think we should go with Green Lantern next.
Oh, I think we should.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to say one thing I have realized about myself is that depending on the audience that I am seeing a film with, I am much more forgiving about certain things. And it's normally when I see movies with Holden, because I get wrapped up in his enjoyment of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's enjoying it, if he's having a good time, I just kind of get sucked up in that.
Sure.
Green Lantern has problems.
Really? The movie.
You know what?
The movie has problems.
If your kid is having problems with the Green Lantern movie, then it's got problems beyond all of us.
He didn't have a problem with it. He enjoyed the hell out of it.
Oh, good.
But
you still saw the problems.
There are problems with this movie.
There are
not as many problems as there could have been, though. And I do not think any of the problems had to do with Ryan Reynolds.
I don't think the problems had to do with Blake Lively. I really enjoyed Blake Ivey.
I don't think it was apart from who was the guy that played
Hector Hammond.
Yeah,
he was the human break, in my opinion.
Yeah,
every time he came on, I'm like,
that was Sarsgaard.
Yeah, and everybody was raving how great he was in the film, and I'm like, did they see the same movie?
But I also think his was the weakest written character. It didn't seem.
Yeah,
it was the biggest problem with this movie was the script.
Which is a flat problem out. With the movie.
Well, yeah.
Flat out. I mean it's the script.
If you don't have a script, you don't have a movie. It's that simple.
The actors did a great job with what they were given.
But there was...
The effects were fantastic.
Brilliant.
Oa was beautiful.
Oa was just phenomenal.
I want to see a movie that's like a war between Oa and Asgard. Just cannons on each of them, just blowing the hell out of each other. Because I just want to see both of those two worlds next to each other, because they're just so pretty.
Well, I just should say that just to reveal any bias I have, that there's a lot of New Zealanders in this movie.
The
costume design, Timira Morrison and Taika Waititi was the sidekick, the goofy sidekick.
Well, he was great. Mm-hmm. The sidekick was terrific. Mm-hmm. There are some problems with this movie. I think the biggest problem was that people say, well, that's what happens when you get four people working on a script. I'm like, well, you know what? They had five people working on Thor, and that script was great. They had, I want to say, five, maybe even six people working on the script for X-Men First Class. That script was airtight. Mm-hmm. The difference between those scripts and Green Lantern was the people on X-Men First Class and Thor, they were working on the same script. They were working with the same story.
Yep.
It seemed like the Green Lantern, they had four guys that were all working on their own scripts, and then they threw it together and said, okay, this is our movie.
Yeah, there were also some problems with direction, like one of the things that was pointed out when Hal shows up to speak to the Guardians, they say something to the effect where, "You've come to our chamber. There are no walls here. You're floating on these huge chairs. There's no walls. How is this a chamber?"
Well, they
and it's, I mean, it was obviously that they had the script written, they had the dialogue spoken, and then they did the special effects.
Right.
To build out the location.
I actually felt the second half is where it fell apart. The first half was okay.
It
just felt like there were, and then the whole thing, what was he doing? He was like, "Oh, I got this ring, and now I'm buggering off. I'm high tying it." And they were like, "Okay, take the ring."
Hey,
yeah.
That was held by one of our most powerful Green Lanterns. But please take it home as a parting gift.
Yeah.
As well as our Green Lantern board game. I mean,
it felt like the Green Lantern. It also felt like the core was stupid. I'm sorry.
Absolutely thick.
I thought they were
thick as rocks. I wanted to see, you know, normally people go...
He was the one that came up with, "Oh, I'm going to draw him into the gravity of the sun." Really? No one else could have thought of that?
Yeah. I would, you know, and as much as people say, "Well, I really didn't want to see a training montage," this movie needed a training montage.
Yeah.
Especially because they had Michael Clark Duncan voicing Kilowog.
I know. That was
want to give him more screen time.
Apparently, when you get a ring, it takes like 2 minutes.
Apparently,
maybe they should have had like a montage where he was reading like the instruction manual.
Exactly. Wait. This one's in this thing. Do you have the English one? No, we lost the English one.
The point where the script was broken, and I realized, you know what? I'm not going to worry about anything else because this movie isn't even trying. Was,
oh, nice. I'll debate on that point, but keep going.
Was the point when... Okay, so we find out that basically we have... Somebody is writing... The first part of this movie is that Ryan Reynolds is playing Maverick in Top Gun 2.
Mm-hmm. Without Kelly McGillis.
Without Kelly McGillis. And so the plan that they have is that we're going to show off our drones to the government.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to hire two of our pilots who we can tell what to do to go after these drones. Now, we don't pick the two people that we know are going to fall in line. No, we pick the hothead who never listens.
And the hottie,
which, I mean, she was the owner's child, so it makes sense that she'd be there because she could have thrown it. For everybody. One, why wouldn't the government have just had military pilots?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that whole sequence was just, it none of it made sense. From any perspective, there was none of that motivation made any sense.
Yeah, they seemed like when he ditched the plane and lost the plane, they seemed surprised.
Yeah. Really? You're going to do that?
And you see, that was...
I reckon he probably ditched a plane every week.
Yeah.
And I think that was the other issue that they were trying... I think this was when they were trying to divert from canon and try to, instead of making Hal Jordan this cocky, you know, this guy who could conquer fear, which was the whole point of the Green Lantern, they wanted to show a third dimension. And because
make
it was
complex.
Make him complex.
The problem is Hal Jordan in the comic books is a dull character.
Mm-hmm.
He is
and you
boring.
See,
if I were a producer in a film, I would say we're going to do either a John Stewart Green Lantern or a Kyle Rayner. And I would probably just go straight for Kyle Rayner because
I heard somebody say this about Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds would have made a better Kyle Rayner Green Lantern than a Hal Jordan Green Lantern.
Absolutely.
Which I would agree. Now, I understand that we're trying to take the best of both worlds. They're trying to take the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern and combine them and mush them together.
Yep.
And it, to some extent, it worked for me. To some extent. And where the movie, I thought, was trying really hard. And I give the actors a lot of credit because, again... The script they had was a train wreck, but it had these wonderful little moments. My favorite moment was when after he rescues after he rescues Blake Ivy, he goes back to his place, and his friend there, and he says, "Seriously, seriously, a kid's Mattel car track." And he said, "Was the first thing that came to my mind. That's the best you could do, man." You know what I mean? the ball busting was there.
Well, and what's brilliant is in his nephew's room, the last thing he does is he walks out of the room.
The last thing he sees is that track.
He taps the car down the track. And it was like, man, that's a great callback to that.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic callback. Nice. And then when he says, "So what are you going to do now?" And he goes, "Well, I'm going to go look for trouble." And he goes, and the best friend says, "But shouldn't you go and get the girl?"
Yeah.
And he goes to get the girl, and he's standing there, and he's going, "Ma'am, I'm just checking up on
you." Oh, that's right. She goes, "How?"
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
That was very funny.
Yeah. I've known you since we were kids. Nice.
You think that job? Tiny little thing's going to...
What's with the mask? It came with the outfit. I mean...
That was a nice little...
Yeah. And you never, you know, and why not? I mean, it made perfect sense. You know, it just proved that Carol Ferris is a hell of a lot smarter than Lois Lane.
Mm.
but what was so I gave them a lot of credit. A lot of people were hard on Blake Ivy, but for me, the whole Hector Hammond character.
They should have had him as a villain.
They should have never had him.
Yeah, there was too many. It's a common case. Too many villains.
Yeah,
just you pick one.
Yeah, and again, you know, let's introduce Sinestro. Let's make him a prick. Okay, that's fine. Oh, he's got to get on the thing about the yellow ring, and I'm like, oh great. Okay, now the fanboys are all squeeing because
the yellow ring's
because going before out. The and I said before the end of this movie we're gonna see Sinestro put on the yellow ring,
mm-hmm.
But the whole Hector Hammond thing, they were trying to give Hector Hammond daddy issues. They were trying to establish Hector Hammond.
Well, everyone had daddy issues in this series.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Carol Ferris, who was, you know, okay with her dad, and Ryan Reynolds, who had lost his dad. But
he kept seeing him blow up.
Yeah, well, you know. But I mean, with the whole Hector Hammond plot line, and good golly, I did not think Angela Bassett could give any worse of a performance than she. Why she was in this movie, I have no.
Why was she in? See, and when she turned to run, she was wearing those ridiculous high heels.
Yeah,
I object to female scientists always wearing high heels when they're going anyway. Sorry,
it was just the Hector Hammond either needed a complete and utter rewrite, or as you said, didn't need to be in there. Just did not need to be in there.
Hector Hammond is one of the least interesting villains that Green Lantern has.
I mean, had they put him up against Parallax and kept it at Parallax and had prepped, you know, because the movie was prepping us for Parallax, and then out of the blue we get Hector Hammond. It's like, I thought the baddie was Parallax.
Yeah.
And also, they needed to give Green Lantern more stuff to do with his ring. Absolutely. Yeah, I just felt that there and the way that I sum up this movie, it reminded me a lot of Star Trek Generations. There was all this stuff in there specifically for the fanboys. Right down to the pointless ending where we have Sinestro put on the ring and he's now suddenly Sinestro.
The Green Lantern Corps didn't even remember that he had it. Oh, we made this yellow ring. And then they completely, don't worry about it.
We're just going to put it away. We're just going
to we don't need that.
The top shelf. That way the kids won't reach it before dinner.
Yeah.
Why don't we just unmake it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a pointless. The yellow ring was an entirely pointless plot line for the fanboys, and what I would have liked to have seen, and part of what make and see now I'm going to talk about the one good thing about the Green Lantern film.
It's his abs, isn't it?
No,
okay.
No. No.
Again,
Chris Hainsworth gets that, but. No, the thing was, it got me reading comic books again.
Mm.
I forgot how much I enjoyed Green Lantern as a hero and as a kid. I've always loved Green Lantern. So I've been catching up, and I've been reading a lot more of the Green Lantern mythos because of the Green Lantern film. And I would have preferred to have seen more of Sinestro as a member of the Green Lantern Corps, and more of Sinestro training Hal Jordan and having the two of them constantly butting heads. You never saw Sinestro butt heads with Hal Jordan. You saw Sinestro bully Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
And that was what I was looking for. That was what I wanted. And instead, we were having... It was just a collection of Green Lantern fanboy moments. I was very... I was very disappointed. I don't think Green Lantern was a bad film.
That was the first movie we watched of the superheroes.
No, we've seen Thor and X-Men First Class already.
Oh, have we? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just it was a real letdown. It wasn't necessarily a bad film.
Oh, it wasn't like now when we came out, we said it wasn't as bad as
Iron Man 2.
It wasn't as bad as I still enjoyed Iron Man 2.
I enjoyed Iron Man 2.
Oh no,
I saw it twice in the big screen.
We were bored with Iron Man 2.
Really?
By the time the strawberries came out, I was nearly asleep.
Yeah. Iron Man. It was not as bad as Iron Man 2, but after seeing X-Men First Class and Thor, it was a far cry from the optimist in me would love to think that they're going to make a second Green Lantern film and get it right, but I'm not holding my breath for it.
they're going to make a second Green Lantern film. I think they've already announced it, actually.
It just probably won't have Ryan Reynolds.
I think it will. I honestly think it will, and I think it should. I don't think he was the problem with this movie.
No,
and
was not the problem.
That was one of the big concerns, was that what is this Joker doing playing Green Lantern, playing Hal Jordan? To be fair, he didn't really play Hal Jordan. He played an amalgam character, which is fine, because I personally have never been all that crazy about Hal Jordan as a character. I thought he's just kind of a stick in the mud for the most part. But having kind of some of the personality traits of Kyle come in, where he's a little more fun, he's not afraid to joke around and bust balls with his friends and things like that. That I liked that. And I guess part of it's because when I started reading, Hal Jordan was an established hero. And then Kyle Rayner came along while I was reading and was a newbie. And was treated as a newbie. He was in awe of Batman, and he was, you know, like everything Batman said was gold, because, you know, it's Batman. Where Hal had no problem butting heads with everybody.
But I just felt that there was a good film in there somewhere.
There was very
much like Generations, very much like Star Trek Generations. You had they were trying to cater so much to the fanboys of both Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation that we got a mediocre film.
And I think they took a few things a step too far.
Yeah.
And I personally the way I looked at the Sinestro storyline with him building out the yellow ring and having it built out is apparently different than everybody else saw it. Because I saw that as Sinestro being very manipulative and basically working the system and saying, hey, Parallax is here. You know, we have the ability to make this yellow ring, and that would be awesome. You know, and that's kind of the whole take I had on Sinestro, was that he was leveraging a bad situation for his own benefit.
Then you know what?
They
should have played that up more.
Yeah, I agree.
And they could have done that. They could have done that without Hector Hammond.
Yes.
And had they done that,
yes,
that would have been a much better film.
If you take out everything that Hector Hammond did and then just play up a manipulative Sinestro just a little more, you have a movie that is effectively the same length and far more interesting.
And then, of course, in my head, what I could see is, Hal is putting up a good fight with Parallax. He's got him on the ropes with his red ring, with his green ring. And then Sinestro, comes in brandishing the yellow ring. He winds up being the thing that pushes him over the edge. But then Sinestro, being Sinestro, thinks it was just him. just his yellow ring, and then he realizes the power, and then he turns on Hal. He turns on the entire Green Lantern Corps. Mm-hmm. That would have been that would have appeased the fanboys, and it would have also made people who weren't aware of the Green Lantern legend to really dig it. But no, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't get that film.
Yeah, and plus,
it's sad that we didn't.
Plus, yeah. Everybody knows that Sinestro's a bad guy. Look at his name.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
I know. So that was another thing that made me think the Green Lantern Corps was thick. We've got this guy called Sinestro. I know. Let's make him one of our leaders. Really?
It's, you know what? It's ironic. It's like calling a fat guy tiny. That's what it is. It's a nickname.
Oh, I get the joke. Oh, he's Sinestro. And then why did we give him the yellow ring again? Never mind.
Look, my mom called me Sinestro, okay? You know how hard it is we're growing up with a name like Sinestro. Everyone call him, oh, look, it's little Sissy. Little Sissy's coming over to play, eh? So you know what? I've got a grudge against the Green Lantern Corps. I'm going to fuck them up with my yellow ring, all right? You know why this ring is yellow? The reason why it's yellow is because I'm going to stain everyone's pants. They're going to be peeing themselves. Biz off.
I'm sorry. And with that, we can move on to Captain America. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
It's a natural transition.
There you go.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and start this off by saying, when I saw the trailer for Captain America during the Super Bowl, I was rigid. I was so excited.
Oh, good.
I knew that Chris Evans was going to be Captain America. And I'd seen, I think they had a little bit of some of the principal photography and stuff that they had released some images. But to see that quick teaser trailer and to understand exactly how they were playing it with telling the bulk of the story in during World War II, I said, man, this is going to be fantastic. I was hyped then. And about a week later, I started to get worried. It's like, man, I'm getting way too hyped about this way too early.
Gotta calm down. This
could be bad.
couldn't have been any cheesier than the 80s Captain America that CBS tried to turn into a television series.
It could.
I remember those very vividly. And very fondly, because you know people razz on the Captain America with his motorcycle and his fuzzy Chevy van and all this stuff
with his clear shield that he used as the windshield for his motorcycle I remember that vividly.
I'm glad I missed out on that.
Well, but the thing is, it was the 80s, so you know you just kind of and also it was CBS. And the Incredible Hulk had just the same amount of cheese, but the difference was Bill Bixby was a little more competent in the executive producer role, and he could actually make those things work really well. But Captain America, I think I would have been more excited about the film if I'd found out before the end of the film who had directed it. Because once I found out that Joe Johnston was the director, I said, no wonder I like this movie so much. Because Joe Johnston knows how to make a beautiful-looking film. I was telling Pip about this. One of my favorite films of all time is The Rocketeer.
That's a good movie.
I freaking love that movie. And one of the reasons why I love it so much is that Joe Johnston knows how to shoot a movie and set it in the right tone. You know, set it in that right... He makes it look right. You forget you're watching a movie. You really look like you're looking back in time with The Rocketeer.
It's also got Jennifer Connelly in it, which does not hurt.
Does not hurt. It was great to see all three of her.
Yep.
Yum, yum, yum. But I'm sorry, are we boring you?
No, she was in a movie with David Bowie who had tight pants.
There we go.
Hey, that's the movie that I can reference because I am the same age as Miss Connelly, so I can perv out about that movie because when I saw it, we were the same age.
There you go.
she may have been underage, but so was I. So it's okay.
So all bets are off. Now Jennifer Connelly was gorgeous in that film. Bill Campbell, who played the Rocketeer, he was just really charming. He was very charming. And bringing it back to Captain America, the thing I liked about Captain America was that it looked
Yeah, it had a beautiful vintage look.
Yeah, it just had a really sharp little vintage look about it. I love the fact that we got to see that that schmoozing the ladies is something that runs in the Stark family.
Yes. Oh, that guy was great.
He was fantastic. Yeah,
Dominic Cooper.
He was wonderful.
He was in the ABBA movie.
She's looking at
Mamma Mia.
First kicked in.
Yeah, the first kicked in.
Are you talking about Mamma Mia?
Mamma Mia, that's the one. Yes.
The thing that really was nice about Captain America was that as a period piece, you know, it really didn't go overboard in the cheese. Really didn't, because
I was expecting it to be very Captain America. I mean, in New Zealand, you don't really get to hear a lot about Captain America because we're not American.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So the whole flag-waving, yo-yo, rah-rah America thing doesn't go over so well when you're not in America.
Right.
So I was. It wasn't so much about that. It was about, you know, his determination and drive to get over into the war
and do the right thing.
And being an underdog and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. I loved the bit where he was on tour, where he was doing the high kicking and punching Hitler. And that was hilarious. I didn't see that coming.
And again, what a lovely callback when the guys, when he's rescuing all these soldiers, and they go, do you know what you're doing? And he goes, oh yeah, I punched out Hitler 200 times.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very charming. It was very, very charming. And again, Chris Evans, I give a lot of props to Chris Evans because...
I liked him a lot more as Captain America than
as the Human Torch.
Sure. I did not care for him as the Human Torch.
I didn't care for any of those. No. I didn't. I mean, Michael Chiklis did his best, and poor Ian Gruffudd. I wanted him.
They should have never had Jessica Alba as Sue Storm.
I even like Jessica Alba as Sue Storm, but the problem was that, again, it went back to the whole scripts with the Fantastic Four, but we're digressing.
Because that never happens on this show.
As we do on the show. I would say this. I would say that was the thing about Green Lantern. I'd put Green Lantern on par with the Fantastic Four films.
That's fair. Yeah.
I mean, you know, because the actors were nailing it, but they just didn't have a script. They didn't have really solid scripts.
Yeah.
So going back to Chris Evans as Captain America.
Yeah.
No, he was very charming.
I also thought the way they put his head on a skinny guy's body.
That was fascinating.
It didn't actually look as weird as I thought it would. I kind of thought that's going to look a little odd.
Yeah, they did it in the trailers.
The effects were fantastic.
No, the effects were very clever.
I love the chick that played Piggy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she was also very good. And the other thing I enjoyed too was how, you know, he was the underdog and the guys were making it tough for him, and then all these macho guys are trying to
get the flag off the pole.
And
that's
he pulls out one nut, the flag comes down, he takes it off, and he goes hi, and he just it was neat watching him evolve from the character. And it was that was the other bit I really enjoyed too, was that they actually gave it a modern feel, because they were going to lock up Captain America in a lab and try to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with you? And what happens? The opportunistic congressman steps up and says,
I got a job for you.
We have a job for you selling U.S. bonds. And then he's like, you know, they're giving him some type of certificate of honor or something. And he says to him, my personal friend, Captain America. And it was like, and I'm like, wow, even back in the 40s, politicians were douchebags, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Given.
And
what I really liked is what Pip, you kind of alluded to, is that this was not a movie that very easily could have been about flag waving, about patriotism for the United States, about, you know, the strength of the United States coming in to help the Europeans during World War II. They could have easily played on any of that, and it would have been fair, but that's not what they went for.
They
went for the character, and they went for the person, and how it was about the underdog, and how if you have heart, you don't necessarily need the muscle. If you have heart and brains, the muscle is great, mm-hmm. but heart and brains will win the day.
Yeah,
and he proved that before he had the strength, like right. you said with the flag. That was a great example of how this guy can be Captain America,
and
why he didn't turn into Red Skull.
The Red Skull,
right?
I was just gonna say Hugo Weaving. You know, he just looks like he always. It doesn't matter what part he is. He always looks like he's having a good
time.
Well,
when you're the Red Skull, you can get away with, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, loved, you're
flying away in a rocket.
A flying wing.
I love during the first sequence with the Red Skull, he makes the Indiana Jones reference.
Yeah, it was very vague.
That was nice. It was very subtle.
He says the Fuhrer can chasing relics in the desert.
The Fuhrer keeps digging up relics, trying to dig up relics in the desert.
Yeah,
but actually Hitler was doing that.
That was the whole thing about Raiders of the Lost Ark to begin with.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I mean that was actually based on, you know, loosely based on what was going on in history. Yeah.
Well, it was a nice way for them to sort of sidestep around the fact that, you know, around that what actually happened in the war
yeah.
was to have the movie concentrate on Red Skull and what he was doing.
Right.
Right. And it was
a very.
And I did get to kill a couple of Nazis on the way. Yeah. You know, when,
well,
you know.
They didn't kill a whole lot of Nazis though, and I think it was
but
the Red Skull.
The Red Skull killed.
Them. I liked how they made the Red Skull and Hydra more despicable than the Nazis.
Yeah,
that's they did.
It's like yeah, these guys are so bad that the Nazis don't have kicked them out. Yeah,
when they came in and they go. Berlin is on this map.
Yeah. What? I mean, and that's that.
Don't you hate it when you get contractors in and they just?
Oh man, and they got their own agendas.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you really do have to sink to a new low when Nazis don't like you. You know?
Exactly.
But no, it was a delightful movie. It was a fun movie.
Oh, I think it was so sad at the end.
Oh, yeah, and that was when I knew it was a good film, because at the very end,
I felt sad for him.
You know, he did. He just felt.
He said, "I'm late. I'm late for a date."
He said. Yeah. He said. I had a date, and you really felt bad for him because he was like, he was no longer. He was alone.
Yeah.
He was completely and utterly alone, and I think Chris Evans also captured that really well. Mm-hmm. The little Easter egg, little teaser at the end for some assembly required, for.
The teaser trailer,
yeah,
for the Avengers.
For the Avengers, I've been hearing a lot of mixed stuff about what's going on, but I think Joss Whedon's going to pull out a really, you know, look, if anyone's going to pull out an incredible film for the Avengers, it's going to be the same man that gave us Serenity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But who's he going to kill?
What?
But who's he going to kill?
Yeah, that's going to be.
See,
the
See, I haven't. T and I have discussed this before, and I have issues with. With movies, they seem to go over the top with more. Like, you know, with Spider-Man, the first movie was great, so they go to the second movie and they go, let's just put more in there, more villains, more of what we have.
But they still managed okay, but it was in the third one that it jumped off the
but
rails.
But with Avengers, they've got more of everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's going
to
be
It's like cranked to 11.
They've been planning for this, though. So
that's the thing.
You have to think right. that they've been angling for this for 4 or 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
This has been where they've been heading since right after. Well, since the Incredible Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no. Even further back than that, the first Iron Man film
was it?
I remember the first Iron Man film.
I know there was. I mean, that's what started the ball rolling.
Yeah.
But I think it was really once they had the success of the Iron Man and then the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
that they finally realize, yeah, we can make this happen.
We can get this go.
I think Ed Norton is going to really, really be wishing he had just sucked it up and dealt with it, because I'm going to miss him as
I will too.
As Bruce Banner.
But I like Mark Ruffalo. I think he can do it.
Well, I'm sure he can do it. I'm sure he'll be better than Banner. I know that much.
Yeah.
I know he'll be better than Banner.
It's just an awful lot to stuff into one movie.
It is. It's gonna be tough. But you know, I also think about this, and maybe I'm a little too close to it because I did see some Firefly before I went to go see Serenity. But the thing that I was really impressed with Serenity the film mm-hmm. that, that Joss Whedon wrote and directed, is that we got caught up with what was going on in the first season of Firefly in the opening credits of Serenity.
Yeah.
And it was done so seamlessly, and everybody got an ample screen time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Whedon can pull it off.
See, I watched Firefly.
Yeah.
I watched Firefly from the beginning.
Right.
So I watched it out of order when it aired. I mean, I saw it all. And when I was concerned that when I heard that, because Whedon directed Serenity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that long pan shot walking through, when the camera followed him through
yeah.
the
yeah.
whole ship, it was like, wow, I am not watching a TV show.
No.
And it was basically, it laid all the cards on the table and said,
yeah.
you're not watching a TV show. Forget what happened before.
Just hold on.
This is a different experience.
Can I be the dissenting voice? I mean, I love I love Joss Whedon, but I'm not one of those people who's like, okay, everything that comes out of a certain person is golden.
A person
could Dollhouse was shit. I'm just going to go out and say it. Dollhouse was shit.
I didn't hate it as much as you did, but I will go and see the movie and then I'll make my decision. But I think it's a difficult thing to do.
But I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this in defense of Joss Whedon, and the reason why I think he's going to be able to pull this off. I didn't think Branagh was going to be able to pull off Thor.
That's true.
I didn't think Branagh was going to be able to pull off Thor.
So we'll just have to see what next summer brings.
Exactly.
And to add to Pibb's voice of dissent, Joss Whedon also made Alien 4.
No.
He wrote it.
He wrote the script for Alien 4.
He wrote it.
And then it got gutted. And then it got gutted by somebody else. I've read the interviews. Whedon said that was not the script and the story that I came up with.
Now
you can see the moments that probably were Joss Whedon, but no.
Well, if you look at Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 3.
Not if we have to, but yeah.
Well, I had at the time a 4-year-old who made us watch it every night. So I am intimately familiar with this movie.
And it's problems.
Well, if the biggest problem with the movie is the introduction of Venom, mm-hmm. if they would have left it just Sandman and the new Goblin
Hobgoblin, that's another example of trying to stuff too much into a movie.
The producers made them stuff Venom into the movie. Now mm-hmm. The black suited Spider-Man was always supposed to be a part of the movie, but when they actually went through the whole sequence of black suited Spider-Man and Venom, that was the step too far. Watching the first half an hour of that movie, up until the point where he gets the suit off. It's actually a really good movie. The sequences with Sandman, when he first becomes Sandman and he's in that pit of sand and he's trying to hold on to his daughter's locket and he keeps trying to grab at it and pick it up and he can't because he keeps turning to sand. That is heartbreaking, and it's really mm-hmm. well done. And the movie actually flows really nicely until they realize, hey, we need to get rid of the suit so we can have Eddie Brock be in there. And it was like, the movie completely changes tone about halfway through, and it dives downhill very quickly. But you can really see the first half of the movie is really well done, and it's really unfortunate they made him change so much in that. Because I think it would have been a really spectacular film, but that's all speculation.
But it's not.
It kind of sucked. Mostly.
Kind of did.
Emo Tobey Maguire. Fail.
Well, emo Peter Parker, when he wore the black suit, was actually just... They were pulling from the material for that one.
Mm.
So, all right. So, we've talked about all four movies.
But now, I would like to throw in the wild card.
All right.
I want to throw in the wild card. I would like to throw in Cowboys and Aliens.
I have not seen it.
Okay.
So, I will let you guys speak about it.
We will talk about this because...
No spoilers, then.
Oh,
go ahead and spoil it.
Well, actually, there is going to be one spoiler.
I've heard enough about the movie that you're not going to spoil it for me. So
the spoiler,
Daniel Craig gets his shirt off.
Yeah,
there you go.
I've heard that.
But here's the major spoiler is that the graphic novel Cowboys and Aliens has nothing whatsoever to do with the film Cowboys and Aliens. Apart from
that's not true. There are cowboys and there are aliens.
Okay, that's about it.
What the aliens are after is the same thing.
Have you actually heard the story about how the graphic novel got made and how this movie was made?
Edumacate us.
This is an interesting tale. And there's a link in an older episode of Backseat Box Office that I'll share with you guys later, because I may fumble some of the parts of the story, but basically. There was a guy who, I can't remember how it all came about, but he got a large sum of money. And he realized that if he could get a graphic novel made and get it high enough up on the sales charts, that he could sell the rights to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what he did was he hired some people out to make the graphic novel. Based strictly on the name, Cowboys versus Aliens. He had, or Cowboys and Aliens, and he had some people draw up some like spec images of like a cowboy with sunglasses and, you know, different things like that. And he had this graphic novel made. He got it listed in Diamond, and got basically went to a number of comic book shops some of the bigger comic book shops on the East Coast, and said, here's what you're going to do. You are going to order 10,000 copies of this book.
Good gravy.
And what we are going to do is, because they wanted to sell it for like $3.99 an issue.
Yeah.
But Diamond wouldn't consider anything below $9.99 a graphic novel. Because they were basically going to send it out to the shops, put a cover price on it that was so ridiculously cheap you couldn't not buy it.
Right.
Mm. And Diamond said, no, sorry, that's not how we work. You won't be listed as a graphic novel if you sell it that cheaply. So they put a $10 price tag on it and went to the comic book shops and said, order 10,000 copies or however many, and we will pay you what it costs for you to order them, because that will be sales. That will count as sales.
And legally they can do that?
Well, they...
Oh.
They can legally do that. What happened was, though, that Diamond caught on to what they did, and when their sales rankings came out, they weren't listed. They refused to list them because they caught on to what happened.
Huh.
Although... Entertainment Weekly was checking in on comic books at the time. This was when comic books were still a hotter property. And they went to one comic book shop somewhere on the East Coast and got their sales numbers. And by far, that one was the number one book of the month. Hmm. So Entertainment Weekly listed that as the number one book of the month.
Diamond got trumped by Entertainment Weekly.
Well,
wow.
Who is Hollywood going to look at more readily? Entertainment Weekly or Diamond Distributors Monthly Reports?
Yeah, no shit. Exactly.
So they actually got...
After seeing the movie, I'm like, why did they bother paying the people who made the graphic novel?
I know.
Cowboys simply, and Aliens, you can't copyright an idea. Cowboys
they scripted
aliens,
it basically... Yeah, they scripted it... They sold the premise basically on the name.
Wow.
And it turned out, the comic book, the graphic novels, in the end, there were reports that the graphic novels were sold for 99 cents a piece or given out if you bought anything at certain stores.
Wow.
Or finally just they had found boxes of them in dumpsters.
And the thing was, I paid like 10 bucks for mine from fucking Borders.
Yeah, you paid cover price for it.
On the plus side, your money probably never made it back to them.
That's true.
That's true. Diamond never got that money. Borders didn't pay them anything.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, Pip and I have read the graphic novel, and we've seen the film. And we've been kind of surprised at sort of the negative tone that people have taken on the film Cowboys and Aliens, because quite honestly,
I didn't like the graphic novel. It was like,
we hated the graphic novel. No, the graphic novel was extremely trite. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good word for it.
It was
trite.
Yeah.
It was really, and the ending. But here's how I would separate the two. Cowboys and Aliens, the graphic novel, was more about the science fiction aspect of it. The prologue. As a writer, I'm probably going to catch some heat for this. The prologue is the strongest thing in Cowboys and Aliens. Because what they did, and this was very clever, they split down the page the parallels between the alien race and how they were subjugating people on other planets and what was happening on Earth at the time and how the Native Americans were being subjugated by the white military and the United States government. And they were taking out passages from the Declaration of Independence and things like that. And it was that was really, really clever. But then, when we actually got to the heart of the story, it just fell apart. It was just an absolute train wreck, and it was. I thought it was poorly written. I thought it was. It lacked a lot of. It was trying very hard to be clever, and it came across that way. And I said, but you know, I really want to go see Cowboys and Aliens because I've been looking forward to this movie all summer long, and it delivered. It delivered. I thought Daniel Craig was incredible. I thought Harrison Ford, people were saying, oh, he's just playing cranky Harrison Ford.
That was me.
That was a lot of people. A lot of people were saying Harrison Ford wasn't really playing a character. But no, his character was actually quite, it was terrific. It was really, really well done. And it was nice to see Olivia Wilde's ass. I won't go anywhere. Yeah. Nice.
That's all right. Harrison Ford got his
Olivia Wilde. Olivia Wilde.
Daniel Craig got his shirt.
Sorry, Daniel Craig. Yeah. Whatever.
And it was just, but on a whole, I was more entertained by Cowboys and Aliens the film than I was by Cowboys and Aliens the graphic novel. Yep.
Absolutely. Oh, the graphic novel was a piece of crap. I was reading it and going, what?
Was it steaming crap?
Yeah, it was pretty steamy.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, so, no, I love Cowboys and Aliens. I thought the characters were really cool and it had a nice vibe. It was a nice popcorn movie.
And that was the other thing. It played up more of, instead of it being more about science fiction,
it was more like a Western.
It was more like a Western.
I like a Western.
That had this sudden science fiction bend thrown in. The last time I had that much fun watching two genres mixed together was this wonderful film called Time Rider, The Adventure of Lyle Swan. And I think I reviewed... Maybe. I can see you. But it was the same thing. It was, you know, it was...
It had Clancy Brown in it.
Oh, yeah. That's where it earned a lot of its points. First off, it got a bonus hit of 5 for having Sam Rockwell in there, and he was fun.
Oh,
but then plus 10 for Clancy Brown playing a preacher who was a sharpshooter. Hell yeah!
This movie sounds familiar, but I'm just not remembering. I'll have to check it back out.
Are you talking about Time Rider? You're talking about Cowboys and Aliens?
No. I have not watched Cowboys and Aliens yet.
That's right.
I'm talking about Time Rider.
Well, Time Rider
sounds familiar.
Just real quick. Basically, it's a motocross guy who strays off the path of his race, and he winds up going to a government testing facility where they're testing time travel, and they send him back to 1886. So he's gone back in time on a motorcycle.
That's
the gimmick of the movie.
If you go fast enough, you can do that.
And it was really fun. It was very tongue-in-cheek and a lot of fun. Cowboys and Aliens wasn't as tongue-in-cheek, but boy howdy, it had some really fun moments. And like I said, I enjoyed a lot, Pip enjoyed a lot, and it really did. It had nothing to do whatsoever. Like I said, it had nothing to do whatsoever with the graphic novel. It was, you know, but it held up better than the graphic novel. I would rather have seen this as a graphic novel than the Cowboys and Aliens that I got.
So let's go ahead and do our rankings.
Okay. Let's see. So, ladies first.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to preface this by saying I did actually enjoy most of the movies. Even Green Lantern, I didn't walk out of and go, I want my money back. I still had fun. But for me, I loved... Well, it's close. X-Men, Thor, Captain America, and Green Lantern. Top to bottom. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just really enjoyed the retro feel of X-Men, and I think in generally speaking, the characters were a little, just fractionally stronger than Thor. But I did love Thor. Mm-hmm. That's my thoughts. Here we go, baby. Go. Okay. You're going to disagree with me. I know you are.
Well, Green Lantern. We can agree on Green Lantern being fourth.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah, I think we could. Wow, that top three is tough. Okay. I'm going to say...
It's a very close run.
It is a very close run. I'm going to be putting X-Men First Class at number three.
Oh,
because... Ooh. Because of several things. One, the abrupt bromance ending.
You and your bromance.
I remember people saying that the actress playing Emma Frost was a little weak.
Yeah, but she wasn't in there that much.
She wasn't in there that much. She was, like I said, she was. She was okay, and because of the quick wrap up at the end. I think I'm going to put X-Men at three. Number two, I'm putting Captain America. I'm putting Captain America there because of the visuals, because Joe Johnston knows how to make a film. And at number one, because it surprised me so much, because it was just visually stunning, because it caught the epic feel of what a movie about a Norse god should be, and because of just how much fun it was to watch, I'm putting Thor at number one.
Hmm.
I thought you'd do that.
Yeah.
Well, for me, from bottom up, we're all in agreement on Green Lantern, and
yeah.
I had fun with it, but it's not in the same class as the other three movies, not at all. if I wasn't comparing it to these movies, it was a fun action movie, but it wasn't anything spectacular. I think next up I would go with and it's a very close third to the second place, and that's, I think it's going to be Thor. And it was good, but I wasn't surprised by anything. It really didn't surprise me. I think the only thing that really surprised me from it was the feeling of brotherhood that I got from Thor and Loki. It was the first time I believed that Thor and Loki were brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We're told that they're brothers in the Marvel comics and in other things, but this was the first time that where the way the two reacted to each other really felt like brothers. Even the way they treated each other, sometimes harshly, brothers will do that. I have a younger brother. I can speak to this.
I was the younger brother, so yes, I can speak to that.
There
too.
There you go. So that, and then I'm going to say, see, this is tough. I'm going to say X-Men First Class.
I knew you were going to go there.
And it's just, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done, but I would have liked to have seen a little more story and spread it out over two films. I would have just liked to have seen a little more.
Right.
And I just felt like this was an ending. And if they, I almost feel like if they make another movie at this point, it will truly be a sequel and not a continuation of what they started.
Right.
And then finally, I'm going to say Captain America. Captain America as itself cannot stand alone as a movie. It is part of a bigger whole, but I still love the hell out of it. I had such a good time watching that movie. I really felt for the underdog character of Steve Rogers becoming Captain America. We didn't mention Stanley Tucci did just an amazing job.
Oh, yes.
He was phenomenal. He was just
Tommy Lee
so
Jones.
Sweet.
And Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee
was he was great.
Tommy Lee was Tommy Lee.
Yeah. Yeah. The
Don't
sequence
leave me,
where,
son. I'm not going to kiss you.
Yeah. So still scrawny.
Yeah.
Where he jumps on the grenade and and even like the other guys, the guys that picked on him were like, "Wow, that I didn't do that."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go Captain America. It was hyped up, and I felt it delivered on all the hype that was built by it and went beyond. So,
but it's all a pretty close call, apart from Green Lantern.
I think those top three are very close, and you know, given a different day of the week, I may have shuffled them out differently.
You could easily say too, though, that just on a quick tangent, that while DC is still trying to get caught up to Marvel, Marvel's had plenty of time to figure out how to make a good not just a good superhero movie, but a good movie. DC Comics, DC Studios are—they're still trying to figure it out, and you know they got to write Christopher Nolan and Batman, but you know
I would disagree, mostly because of DC's animated movies.
That's what I was going to say. When it comes to their animated stuff, DC stands head and shoulders above Marvel.
Yes,
I can't watch Marvel animated, but I can watch DC animated.
Yep.
Nathan Fillion is the voice of the Green Lantern. Shoot, why didn't they get Nathan Fillion to play Hal Jordan? That would have been great casting right there.
Oh, absolutely. There's a fan trailer a couple years ago with Nathan Fillion as Green Lantern. Now, have you heard the rumor that there's a secret movie being made at Warner's?
Oh dear. No.
Yes, there is a secret there. The rumor has it that there is a secret project in development, and I believe in pre-production is the rumor, and it's a Batman Superman movie. With Nolan as the producer, with Henry Cavill and Christian Bale in the roles of Superman and Batman.
Mm.
And it is. This is the distressing part, at least for me. The rumor of what the gist of the movie is they haven't figured it out yet, because it's either going to be a young Batman is mentored by Superman, or a young Superman is mentored by Batman early in their career, and it's supposed to take. Take off on some of the Batman Superman series of comic books that has been going for the last number of years.
Hmm.
But yeah, that is a rumor that I heard not too long ago, and no one came out and emphatically denied it. So for what it's worth, and apparently the biggest hang up at the time was getting Bale back into the Batsuit.
I've been hearing Bale apparently does not care for the Batsuit and doesn't care for the Batman films. And, of course, I would say, hey, Bale, shut the F up, because you're working with Christopher Nolan, and
let's face it, he's a difficult-sounding person to deal with, anyway.
He's don't understand.
and realistically,
you're a nice Kiwi and all, but we're done professionally.
We're gonna not be. We've got another book to write.
Tony Mast, what the fuck are you doing?
You're all
shut up, you and your podcast. Shut up. You don't understand. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But yeah, rumor. So.
We'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I mean...
What's to look forward to next summer, then? So we've got the Avengers.
Pretty
much whatever film Christopher Nolan's working on, because Inception.
The Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises. That's also next summer.
Yep.
There's the Avengers, there's the Dark Knight Rises.
Captain America 2.
Captain America 2 for next year?
Not for next year. I think that's 13.
Yeah, I think those are. I think right now those are the two biggies.
Okay.
So basically, it's going to be DC. Yeah. It's going to be DC versus Marvel again. But actually, I'm going to go even further. It's going to be Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon's directing Foo against Christopher Nolan's directing Foo. And let me tell you something.
Nolan brings it.
Nolan
He just won the Hugo.
Just won the Hugo for Inception.
So,
and and also comparing Nolan to Whedon,
that's like comparing
Hitchcock to Frank I'm blanking on the Frank Capra. Is that what I'm thinking of? The guy who directed the film It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, Capra.
Frank Capra. That's like comparing Frank Capra to Alfred Hitchcock. Okay, you know, two great directors, but two extremely different directors,
Wow. Honestly, I can't imagine Nolan making a movie like The Avengers.
He wouldn't.
I just can't see it.
No, I can't see it either.
Now, I could see him making a movie based on Identity Crisis. Have you read that graphic novel?
I vaguely remember that.
The wife of the Elongated Man is killed.
Oh, right. Yes.
And
yes.
It's like there's a murder mystery which turns into... I mean, it's in this story, there's murder, rape, mind control, mind erasing. It's deep, heady stuff for a comic book. And I can see Nolan tackling material like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
not
heavier material.
Not the Avengers.
So it's going to be an interesting summer next year.
Mm-hmm. That it will.
And the good news is I'll have made Pip an honest woman by then. So.
Oh really?
Really? Oh really?
Is this scoop?
What?
Is this some kind of scoop or?
No. Oh, okay. You knew about me popping the question, right?
I knew about you popping the question. I didn't realize that there may be a date set.
Well, no date is set.
Okay. That's what I'm referring to.
No, trust me, when the date's set.
We got an offer from Locust to cover us getting married.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
I pulled it back. I thought,
well, they're going to pay for it.
I was actually going to say to them, I'd rather have you guys review our book, you know, but I didn't want to go there, so.
Can you review the book as part of the article?
Yes. Before we get married, I'm now going to read some select reviews of our book.
Yes.
Please take notes, especially Locust there at the back.
Yes, there we go.
Yes, we are working towards that. So
we're working towards a date. But by the time the Avengers comes out, she'll be an honest woman by then. I'm pretty sure.
Oh my gosh, saying that getting married does not make me an honest woman. I'll be as saucy as ever.
So, don't get saucy with me, Bernie.
Yes, precisely.
On that note, I think we should wrap it up.
Yeah, it's probably time. You two can have some alone time after all this.
All right. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, thank you guys for showing up. Really appreciate it.
This was good fun. This was definitely good fun. It was also nice to chat a bit about and also get some validation on some of the stuff that we caught in these films. Good stuff. I mean, it was actually a better summer for comic books than I expected it to be.
Yeah, I looking at it at the beginning of the summer, there was really only one movie that I knew I was going to see.
Yeah.
And I knew I was going to see Captain America. For better or worse, I knew I was going to see it. And I'm not even that big of a Cap fan, but everything I saw just said I'm heading that direction. And as much of an X fan as I am, I did not see X-Men First Class until well into its run.
Yes, I think we waited a little while before we went.
Yeah, we did. We did wait. In fact, the only movie we really rushed out to see right away was Deathly Hallows 2.
Oh yeah.
But we were genuinely surprised, very happy, and even a little disappointed. But so we'll just have to wait and see what next year brings.
And speaking of surprises, Deathly Hallows 2, disappointed.
Oh,
disappointed.
Brave words, man, because we were...
Deathly Hallows 1, best movie of the franchise.
Ooh.
Deathly Hallows 2, not.
Well, it's kind of but to me it's kind of like Lord of the Rings versus Lord of the Rings. Would you say that the Two Towers was a weaker film versus Return of the King? Was Return of the King anticlimactic? It's one great big story, and that was the way I was looking at it. And it was very nice to see everything wrap up at the end. I kind of had wished that they had done the same sort of montage they did with the cast at the end of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
that would have been cool. But still, it was just nice to be able to see that end.
I think for Deathly Hallows 2, my biggest disappointment was how there were some really great moments that were marginalized, and that they changed fundamentally how Voldemort's end came about, and I just didn't care for it.
Mm.
Now I'm hoping, and it's one of those fingers crossed hoping that when the DVD comes out, that there's maybe about 20 more minutes of footage
that gives me
some of the things that I felt were just cut, which flat out cut from the movie. Why did George have to die off screen? And why did we not even know it was George? In the movie, you don't know. You know it's one of the twins. You don't know which one.
Interesting.
And you don't know who killed him. And the payoff is that it should have... I mean, in the book, it's Bellatrix.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Weasley takes her out in a phenomenal way. There was no importance to Mrs. Weasley taking her out.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, there were some moments that it would have taken 30 more seconds of screen time to give us.
I have a feeling you're going to get that DVD.
I think so. I think so. The thing was, is this was one of the shortest movies of the series. The seventh one was, if I'm not mistaken, it's the shortest or one of the shortest. Of the franchise, because we were when Julie and I went to see it, I said, "Oh, we need to make sure we block off 3 hours." So, whoa, hour 40. What's this about? Because it wasn't even 2 hours long.
Interesting, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
it kind of whizzed by.
Yeah.
So.
Huh.
See, sure. This is what you get listening to this podcast.
Ah, there you go.
All right. Thank you guys for showing up. Really do appreciate it. It's always fun.
You bet.
And this will be a special episode, mostly because we are like 4 weeks away from Archon, but 3 episodes away from 200. So I have to put a spacer or two in there.
Gotcha.
It will be the spacer.
Gotcha.
We don't mind.
Gotcha.
And for those of you listening at home, next week we are talking... The World According to Garp. And then after that, we're doing 1 Hour Photo and then World's Best Dad. So that's our three Robin Williams movies leading up to episode 200.
All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Good night.
Bye.
See you.
Talk to you later.
Bye.